Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, November 3rd, 2024, is by Claire Longton North on the topic of Welcome to the End Times, Creation, Generosity, and Trust.
And good morning, my beautiful friends, and I'm thanking you all for welcoming me back to your fellowship and at such a crucial, vital, painful, wild time. And I'm honored to be chosen, and as you all are harboring so many deep and intense feelings, fears, and anxieties, well, I'm a bit of a train wreck myself. So today we're going to meet each other in that field that Rumi talked about, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing. And I want to make this part of the service a pilgrimage, because we are on one in these times, especially in the next few days. And I'm inviting all of our souls to lie down in that grass in that field and take deep rest to birth our vision, where the world is too full to talk about. I've come today to share with you what's helped and nourished me in these tumultuous days. And I must say, you know, I'm delighted and very buoyed at the inspired responses to all of the adversity we are experiencing and imagining is going to be coming our way. Invitations to meditations showing up every day, people sharing inspired readings from spiritual teachers, rituals and ceremonies, people showing up in ways that they didn't imagine themselves ever doing to meet this turning point of adversity. Someone or something has come to me every day to inspire, to fill my own courage well, to renew and refine my intentions, to remind me that I'm choosing how to make the memories shaping this time. I remember my first acting teacher, Bob Alexander in Washington, D.C. He was with Arena Stage in their improv troupe then. And in our first session, he told me that my first order of the day in my creative life was to stay inspired. He told me to read, to stay informed, seek out beauty, listen to the world around me, raise my voice, and keep my heart uplifted. I want to welcome you all today with a Celtic water ritual. And this isn't a ritual that is confined to that particular culture or tradition. It's practiced all over our world. Shrines have bowls of water to symbolize the divine. There are holy water fonts in many churches. Water is life. So much of us is water. And it also represents divine inspiration and how that flows to us. So I'm going to take a bowl around and offer you water to let you wash the dust of the journey off of you, to refresh you, to welcome you to the place you finally arrived at, and to give you a fresh start. And I'm offering it today because these past weeks and the month moving us inexorably toward this election have left the dust and grit of the hard, harsh road on all of us. And I've got a bowl here with water, some lavender essential oil, and lovely rose petals Naomi and Joan contributed. And I'm going to bring the bowl around, and you're invited to create your own experience within your own comfort level with this. And just take care of yourself. You can dip your fingers or your hands. You can pass your hands over the bowl without putting them in the water. You can offer a prayer or a mantra, or you can just wave the bowl on. You can gaze into the water and ask for a vision. The water is a blessing, and it's brought to cleanse away at least some of the anxieties and the fears that may have become habitual to us during this time. And it's our renewal. It brings the inspired way forward. And here is a poem prayer by John O'Donohue to begin, called The Traveler. So take it in. When you travel, a new silence goes with you. And if you listen, you will hear with your heart what love wants to say. A journey can become a sacred thing. Make sure, before you go, to take the time to bless your going forth, to free your heart of ballast, so that the compass of your soul might direct you toward the territories of spirit, where you will discover more of your hidden life and the urgencies that deserve to claim you. These are our end times, because, you know, we are in this alembic of change in this lifetime, but we're also the alembic itself and the fire underneath it, the crucible creating the change. We're creating our next breath as I speak. Life is just so heightened right now, so intense, so seemingly black and white. In my personal belief system, I believe that I chose this life, this incarnation, the parents who brought me into this world, and what was I thinking? I have asked myself that question many times when I feel so ill-equipped to fulfill Gandhi's directive to be the change you want to see in the world. But here I am, with all of you. I'm thinking back when I was standing here with you last year on October 15th, where the war had been ignited between Israel and Palestine on October 7th. And a year later, that war rages on and has expanded to Lebanon and Iran. Ukraine's war continues even longer. We are beside ourselves over so much that seems so enormous and so far out of our reach. Everything I said last year, I could say again today, but what we have now needs to be a reconfiguration. Today can be a renewal of vows to what we want our lifetimes to be and to stand for. We are mostly elders in this room, and we know our time is short here. We're in our own end times. We've created a precipice, and the patience of our planet Gaia is stretched thin. And for how we will choose to treat each other in the creation of a new paradigm. Because the one we have is very broken and clearly not working for the planet or for us as inhabitants and guests of this earth. Adversity is herding us to the edge of the precipice as it always does. We must change. We must be the creators of that change. And as the humans we are, moving paradoxes, we hate change. Personally, I'm doing my best not to let adversity shove me over the edge. I want to grow wings, take the leap, and explore the possibilities of the space beyond this sharp-edged cliff. And hopefully, I won't get shoved off while I'm trying to figure out how to use those wings. Today, I want to share with you something that came across the lovely cyberspace to me. The brilliant writer and meditation teacher Tracy Cochran sees election week as a practice, and she calls it that, election week. She told the story of traveling on a pilgrimage between Nepal and India with Jetsunma Tenzin Palmo, the renowned nun and great spiritual teacher, and it was a group of Buddhist nuns and other American women. They were halted at the border between Nepal and India because there was an issue with Tenzin Palmo's visa. And Tenzin Palmo said to Tracy, "Well, we're nowhere now." They were corralled between two forbidding bunker buildings, being watched by wild dogs and men with machine guns, wondering what would happen next. Does this resonate? Tracy Cochran said in those moments, the pilgrimage redefined determination for her as not steely will, but a softer, steadier state, a willingness to show up for what is happening, even when it is confusing or difficult, a willingness to go on being. She once again came to the realization, and I imagine even deeper this time, that a great deal of our practice comes down to being with ourselves like a wonderful, loving friend. Yes, like a Buddha. Our practice is not to repress anxiety, fear, anger, even downright panic, but to meet it with wisdom and compassion, which we all have. She reminds the reader that the Buddha's night of enlightenment lasted a long time. It wasn't a single lightning flash clarifying eternity's truths. There were a series of illuminations bringing him to understanding of the law of karma and how separation is the root of all suffering. This election week, Tracy Cochran suggests we try to notice when that sense of separation seems particularly sharp, and notice that we can bring compassionate acceptance to this very state, and even a bit of lightness. Loving awareness does not have to be serious. It can be the kind of friend we feel we shouldn't be allowed to sit next to on solemn occasions. Joan, I'm looking at you. Loving, but also open to the absurdity of even the situation itself. Open to moments of joy. I'm in hearty resonance to embrace this and to allow my own heart to creak open to joy and for my belly to release to laughter. Another sight that came my way, it was like everything I needed for today just came to me. Many gifts. And some of you may be on this. It's Maria Popova's extraordinary sight, The Marginalian. If you got that, you get that, some of you. It's so wonderful. And I was led to a piece, you know, as she always gives, well, if you liked this, read this and go here and go there. And this was by Hannah Arendt. Am I saying that correctly, Arendt? Okay. About how totalitarianism creates isolation, which then creates loneliness. And Arendt says, only when the most elementary form of human creativity, which is the capacity to add something of one's own to the common world, is destroyed, isolation becomes altogether unbearable. Isolation then becomes loneliness. And I realized when I read those words how that toxic triumvirate smothers our inherent generosity. In conversation with my beloved, brilliant friend Martha Cornwell the other day, we were discussing the worst outcome of this election and what our response would need to be. locally. And Martha spoke eloquently about how local communities and towns would have to create and enhance existing systems to keep making healthy, cooperative ways of living possible, and how we will need to take care of each other. You know, she reiterated that part to me about taking care of each other. And I was so deeply inspired and moved by her commitment to this. Mind you, she was telling me this while we were talking about the real possibility of violence at our local polls. So to take care of each other, to extend ourselves into this vital energy exchange, means having the courage to lead with generosity when isolation and loneliness would form a tight carapace to imprison our giving. Our generosity must not be stifled. It's what makes us luminous in our humanity. John O'Donohue reminds us that the ancient and eternal values of human life, truth, unity, goodness, justice, beauty, love, are all statements of true belonging. And we most intimately inhabit these eternal values when we are sharing them. You can't go out and buy these values. They are essences unto themselves and inhabit all of us. They are how we share the love that is the force that keeps the universe constantly creating itself. Generosity is a quality America is having a learning curve about. Okay, now, well, it's a young country, think about it, in comparison to places where your ancestors came from, or still are, you know? And there's a lot of mixed messages. My feeling is that there must be a population, we must be a population of healthy, educated people to keep evolving democracy. And to have that, there must be a cultural norm of generosity within the population and the government. Our health cannot be held hostage by the capricious greed of insurance companies. Nor should a political party keep trying to take away the imperfect but only healthcare systems we have. It seems not only generous but pragmatic that I want my neighbors and fellow citizens to have healthcare. And it's the same for education. Student loan debt became a form of indentured servitude, and the onus of it is discouraging our young people from pursuing education. That just does for me. What's the point of being touted ad nauseam as the richest country in the world if we can't manage to take care of each other in ways both large and small? To say freely, I want the best for my neighbor. I want the highest and best for my neighbor. We may not agree, but I want that for them. I want them to be healthy. I want them to be educated. Once again, the Marginalian gifted me with a wonderful piece by one of my hero visionary writers, Octavia Butler. You love Octavia Butler? Oh, that's great. And have you all noticed how many science fiction and magical realism writers were astonishingly prophetic? Octavia Butler wrote a two-part series, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, and they're set in the 2020s. Here we are. And this is a verse from the parable of the talents, because she and Ursula Le Guin had in common that they were able to weave poetry and prose together so artfully. When apparent stability disintegrates, as it must, God is change. People tend to give in to fear and depression, to need and greed. When no influence is strong enough to unify people, they divide. They struggle one against one, group against group, for survival, position, power. They remember old hates and generate new ones. They create chaos and nurture it. They kill and kill and kill until they are exhausted and destroyed, until they are conquered by outside forces, or until one of them becomes a leader most will follow, or a tyrant most fear. And yet, we continue to have generosity with her seeds and talents, sowing and giving in remarkable ways. We do this. This is who we are. And we form our intention to give something every single day. And in her shortest verse, Butler says, kindness eases change. Kindness eases change. Trust walks hand in hand with generosity, and being able to trust in our communities and cultures makes us want to engage with generosity. America has devolved in this quality, and that was pointed out by Richard Rohr in his book, The Naked Now. Don't you love that title, The Naked Now? You know, everything divides into oppositions, such as liberal versus conservative, with vested interests pulling against one another. Trust is no longer possible at this level of conversation. Even theology becomes more a quest for power than a search for God and mystery. One of the great wounds of our time is the feeling of being unmoored, or not feeling the ground is solid under us. You know, it takes me a few minutes in the morning to get my feet on the ground out of the bed and say, okay, it's there. And because the inside of me is expecting quicksand, you know, that I'm not going to be held. And, you know, when I was going through the part on trust and researching it, there were so many articles on the lack of trust in the US. And I remember during the pandemic, I heard a woman say in an interview how the US was one of the most low trust countries in the world. And that was an epiphany for me. You know, I'm sorry I couldn't find that interview to give you the source. Because when my personal gremlin issue about trust is a national issue, it takes someone else to put it in front of my own eyes. You know, the money we handle every day says, in God we trust, on it. And here we are. I think the quote and article that said it the way that I wanted and needed to hear it was by Jedediah Britton Purdy, and that was in The Atlantic in January of this year. And he says, to have any hope of rebuilding democratic trust, we will need two things that have been neglected for decades in American life. One is civic virtue. Civic virtue. Serious and respectful engagement in the hard work of living with disagreement and difference. The other is a radical commitment, radical, to building a social world where trust comes more readily. And this is the work before us, no matter what the outcome is on Tuesday, and what we might be awaiting the outcome for a while longer. We have to trust that we can build a world where trust is not an outlier, but it's a primary choice and a gift in our lives that we can access. So I want to thank you all for the ears of your hearts this morning. And we are in this together, and we must take care of ourselves and each other this week. Keep it simple and take right and beautiful actions. Make a big pot of something savory or sweet and share it around. Go for walks. Meditate, pray, visualize. Do the baby belly breath. Clean your house. Take a bath. Read spiritual writings. Pay loving attention to the experiences you're choosing and creating. And trust they will gift you with wonder, wisdom, and miraculous truths. Let the last lines of Jane Hirschfield's poem, The Weighing, be your talisman. So few grains of happiness measured against all the dark, and still the scales balance. The world asks of us only the strength we have, and we give it. Then it asks more, and we give it. In every ending, we know that a beginning is being birthed. And I'm walking with all of you into the mystery of these end times with love and wonder and peace and passion and devotion. And I love you. Thank you.